Kamala Harris was raised by a working mother who instilled in her a passion for justice, equality, and standing up for your community. That's why as district attorney, she pioneered a program to give nonviolent drug offenders a second chance. And as president, Kamala Harris will continue fighting for us. Because rents, groceries, and utility bills are still too high. Harris's plan to fix it? Build more homes to lower prices and make the wealthy and billionaires pay their fair share in taxes. As president, Kamala Harris will always have our backs.
I'm Kamala Harris, candidate for president, and I approve this message.
Paid for by Harris for President.
And the worms crawl in, the worms crawl out. They'll eat your guts and spit them out. And when your bones begin to rot, the worms remain, but you do not. So don't ever laugh as a hearse goes by, for someday you'll be next in line. And when death brings his cold despair, ask yourself, will anyone care?
Macabre may not be suitable for all audiences. Listener discretion is advised.
How was your weekend?
Busy.
In a good way?
Yeah, yeah. We did it's called Metamora. It's like this old-timey little town that has like a mill. And back when I was in grade school, it used to be a lot more popular, but of course that was pre-internet. So it has like little shops and antiques and stuff like that. Now it's not nearly as busy as it used to be, but they had like a strawberry festival yesterday. So
yeah,
it's like yesterday and today. So we went out there and I did a little antiquing. I found some first edition books. I found one, a Robin Hood for $6.
What?
Yeah, and this one called Crime and Something. It's like a bunch of old scary stories. And I looked them up on Google Images, and they're both like $80 books online. They're both from the 1920s. I was like, okay, score.
That is amazing.
Just like little hole in the wall places. And I guess what happened was the owner said that this woman's husband had passed away and he had this huge collection of books and she just brought him to the shop and just dropped him off. He said she brought in like signed editions of some stuff and they were gone like within a week. So there's like a shit ton of, so I was literally just looking for like the solid colored books, you know, that just are unassuming. And then when you pull them out and flip through, there's like illustrations and yeah. So that was fun. So cool. And then I found like that medicine bottle, paid $2. Yeah. $2, which is like impossible to find those for less than ridiculous amounts of money.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
And then I found like an old gin bottle. Yeah, so it was a good day for me as far as like finding oddities and stuff.
Heck yeah. So, those pictures you sent me, I was like,
so when I do my move and like set up the new studio space, like that's my goal is I really want to amp up my like medicine bottle apothecary stuff.
Yeah.
That's going to be a goal of mine. And then the lady in the bookstore, she had like smaller versions of your skeletons sat up on her shelves and they were like reading books and stuff. And I was like, I need those. I was like, are you selling those? She said, not those, but she said, come back around Halloween. I might have extras in storage that I'll put out. And I was like, I'll definitely be back. So
yes,
we'll see.
Yes. Oh my gosh, I'm so excited. I can't wait to see what you're going to do in your space. Oh, I wish that if we had a little bit more space and stuff, I would absolutely get a vintage couch. And these guys.
Dude. Speaking of, somebody on Marketplace had one about a 20-minute drive. She did not respond to me for $125. It's gold and black.
What?
Yeah.
For $125?
$125, yeah. And so I was thinking about reversing it because most of the couch itself, the cushion area is kind of like this gold color, but it's not like a hideous gold. It's like a...
Mm-hmm. That rich.
Yeah. So yeah. I could totally be fine with that. But I was like, I can fabric paint it black and then the wood make it gold and make it just like, you know. But she hasn't responded to me. And I was like, I could go drive there, put it in the back of my vehicle and put it in my storage until I move.
Yes.
So yes. Fingers crossed, but I'm definitely going to do that. That is my plan, is to find one of those little couches to put in there.
Do it. That sounds so awesome.
So plans, yes. People. Plans. Now that I'll have more space, that is my plan. Mm-hmm.
Heck yes. I love decorating. I love that kind
of
stuff.
I'm jealous of your space because you've got like those beautiful bookshelves back there, and you got your have you named your skeletons? Do they have names?
I haven't.
Oh man.
No, I'm thinking about putting that on the Facebook group. Be like, hey.
Votes?
Name them. Yeah, votes. Name these. Right now.
Or you could run a contest and just pick the winners for, you know, like the best names.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that'd be awesome. Best names. Well, we would have to figure out. Right? Oh my gosh, can you imagine? Somebody names one. Yeah.
I mean, Polidori. The kind of the one that's to your left kind of is creeping me out a little bit. Yeah. Oh, who knows what's going on back there behind the scenes? Can't really tell. So
it looks kind of sketchy from from the chair's point of view.
Right.
I had it before where, and he kept falling down, so I was like, okay, well, crap. But I had a book resting up on the one shelf because he wasn't able to hold it. I tried to do a little light one, you know, and he was like, meh, kept dropping out. I was like, whatever. But he's like literally like hanging onto the bookshelf and like, oh, back there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very appropriate.
Yeah. Oh. Yeah, I love that idea. We should do that. That's what I should do this week, actually, in the group. Be like, hey, long time coming, but we need to get some ideas out there for
name these skellies. Names.
Name them. Repost that picture that I got when yeah. that I took before.
I like that.
The one bent over. yeah.
Also,
I like.
So, friends who can't see us, I'm repping the podcast today. The shirt mm-hmm. that Blair had made, the Macabre Podcast logo shirt.
Heck yes. It's a prototype, people.
Yeah.
Hopefully, we can get that going soon. Right now, I'm wearing a Headless Horseman shirt.
I love it.
Thank you. If you are interested, for people who also can't see this, there is a girl. She's a wonderful woman. Like, oh my gosh. I follow her on Instagram, and that's how I originally found her. Her store is called Wonder Witch Boutique. And she does all of these, like, literary people, and she makes them into, like, rock t-shirts.
I love that idea.
Oh, it's so good. Like, I want to buy the whole website, and seriously, half of my t-shirts have come from her shop. I first discovered her when I first went to Salem. There is a cool frickin' store called Nocturne. They have some really cool shit in there. Well, she's got some of her shirts in there. And ever since, I've been buying her shirts online for a long time. I've got a Jane Austen shirt. I actually have several Jane Austen shirts. I have several Greek mythology shirts. I mean, they're amazing. If you haven't checked it out, please do. Wonder Witch Boutique. She is not sponsoring this episode. If she listened to the show, I would be ecstatic. But she probably doesn't, and that's okay. She's fucking cool. I want to rep her on my own time.
Yeah.
But yeah, she's so cool. But yeah, for people who can't see, it's like a metal band shirt, and it says Horseman. And it's got the Headless Horseman from Sleepy Hollow on it. And it's freaking awesome.
Super cool. It's a pretty great way to segue into the episode we're doing today, actually.
Uh-huh. I know. Yeah, we've got Macabre written all over this episode. And this one has been a long time coming. And we did a little bit of a funny one over on Patreon. But today is E. is for Edgar Allan Poe. Because, you know what? Edgar Allan Poe was macabre, like, to a T. So, get yourselves warmed up and hot and ready, because we're about to do this. But before we get there, hey, welcome. You are listening to Macabre, Dark History Podcast. And, we'd like to make it official. I'm Blair.
I'm Hallie.
It's nice to meet you. We're here nerding today about Poe, as we should. We talked about Nevermore before, but I know you macabre babies are wanting a little more from us. So because everybody gets a gothic boner for Poe, we are doing, we are going deep in for Poe today. So before we nerd so hard, my hype notes are: a man with a dark mind, Mr. Poe really knew how to write a good thrill. For him, life really did imitate art. So join us as we nerd about the most prolific macabre writers to ever write. It's on. Now, for those on Patreon who have heard us get kind of wild and crazy, you are getting a little bit more of a treat, because we are digging really deep into his life today. Last time was just a joke, which we'll talk about later because that will come into play. Side note on that, I think I've tried to practice so hard and I got in my head so hard that when I tried to practice before we got on recording today, I couldn't fucking get it. So we're going to see how this goes later. So we'll... For people who don't know, just you wait. Cringy? Funny? We'll find out. But let's start with talking about Edgar's life. Okay? From the beginning, unfortunately, Mr. Poe had it rough. And I mean, pretty rough even for the time frame of where we're talking. Like, this man... he was just macabre through and through. Edgar Allan Poe was born on January 19th of 1809 in Boston, Massachusetts, to Eliza and David Poe Jr., who are originally from Baltimore, but they were traveling actors, so they were constantly around, going which way and what. And that will kind of reflect in Poe's life, too. He was not about staying in one spot. That kid had to move. Edgar was still really new to the world when his father David and Eliza, they had children before Poe, and we don't really talk about that a lot. He wasn't an only child. He definitely had siblings. We don't hear a lot about him. And for time's sake today, we're really not going to get into his siblings. But Edgar was very, very young when his father David left Eliza with all the kids, just up and left. Obviously, for the time period, in itself, it's hard. But for the time period, it was even worse, because she didn't have anywhere to really go. And she didn't have enough of a reputation to really get the help that she needed with all of those children. So obviously, with the added stress of that, and not being able to get the support and resources that she needed, things were pretty rough. And 2 years later, in 1811, Eliza died in Richmond, Virginia, after contracting tuberculosis.
Oh, no.
Yeah. Poe really didn't have a lot of good family relationships, we're going to find out. So after this happened, his godfather came into play. His name is John Allen. He had taken Edgar into his home, and John was a merchant in Richmond, as it was, so he was more well off. He had a reputation, and he was able to take them in, and I think you kind of hear some different stories about him, but I really think that the reason he took Edgar in to begin with was because him and his wife were childless. Now, I don't know what the situation with that was. But it really did seem like John's wife just really wanted to have a child in the house. I really don't think John cared which way or what.
He just wanted to support his wife, and this was an opportunity. Yeah. How old was Edgar Allan at this time?
Like two or three.
Oh, so he was very young.
Very young.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, and honestly, Edgar was never actually adopted by them. John never signed the paperwork.
No, official. Okay.
And I think that says a lot about what their relationship was like throughout his life.
So he would have never really even remembered his parents. There's a good chance he never would have even remembered them. Okay, good to
know. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, he was a really smart kid. I mean, he showed a lot of potential, and I think John wanted Edgar to follow in his footsteps. Edgar was a little rebellious. He wasn't really one to like being told what to do. He was very much a dreamer, and he liked to do what he liked to do, and he didn't really care about what other people wanted him to do, which we're going to see also. From the get-go, we need to know, I mean, obviously by stating that John never actually adopted Edgar. They had a tumultuous relationship. They never saw eye to eye, and it only got worse over time. And that played a big role into, I think, how Edgar was molded and what truly happened to him later. So speaking of that, now we're kind of fast forwarding into like 1815. And between 1815, 1820, he's a little kid. I shouldn't say little kid. At that point, he's like, you're going on your prospects to find a job. You know, back then, he's probably looking for an apprenticeship, classic education. He was sent off to Scotland and England, where he was given a classical education. That, unfortunately, had to continue back in Richmond again. So during this time, he had developed quite the gambling habit. And a reason for that was John was really good about trying to get him into these prestigious places for an education, but John was kind of half-assing it and kind of leaving Edgar to fend for himself. Not necessarily just like, hey, like grow up, that, you know, you're off to this boarding school type thing with a bunch of other kids your age, but also not even giving him enough money for the education. So, yeah, now keep that in mind, because this happened again. Let's fast forward to 1826. So now he's back in Richmond trying to get this education. He attended the University of Virginia for a very short stint of 11 months. Why was this? John Allen, once again, took him out of the school. Edgar gets shifted back in Richmond. The gambling problem begins again. So what happened? Why was he gambling? What was the losses? What had he done? It wasn't necessarily that he was a full-on troublemaker. It was because by the time he got back to the university, John was doing the same thing all over again. Here, go to this school. But he was only given $110 for tuition, which in that time period, obviously, tuition wasn't like it was today. But still, $110 wasn't even a third of what his tuition costs for a year. The reason why Edgar had developed a gambling problem was he actually did really well in school, and he didn't want the education to end, but he was gambling anything that he could in order to gain the money to finish paying for the education. He ended up triple the times in debt. And he got kicked out for the gambling.
Oh, no.
They told John about it. By the time they got him out, he was over $2,000 in debt.
Oh, shit. So, yeah, probably.
And that was for that time frame. Yeah.
Had John just given him the fucking money in the first place, probably would have been just fine. But, yeah.
Yes. And John was one of those people that was like, yeah, you get to go to the school and, you know, do this stuff, but it has to be the type of education that I want you to get. You need to go for this particular profession. Mm-hmm. It can't be something else, which I think also played a factor in, oh, you're going to do this? Well, then I'm not giving you all of what it's owed because you're not going for what I want you to go for.
You don't get all the money. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, as you can imagine, John and Edgar were fighting now after this. I mean, they were constantly in and out of arguments. And, you know, Edgar said, I wanted to be here. Like, I wanted an education. And John just refused to let him go back. Well, I mean, what do you do? If it's going to be like that, no. And I don't know why John was that way. Because, I mean, yes, Edgar was very rebellious. He was, I mean, even in the time frame, he was a different sort of kid. He just was different. But not even allowing a good head start for this kid, because clearly John had the money for it.
You know? I mean, that's not uncommon, though, for a parental figure to be like,
oh,
no, you're going to do what I want you to do, and you're not going to do what I want you to do. I mean, I can speak from experience. Then I'm not going to give you the money, and you're going to have to figure it out on your own. That's classic.
Yeah.
Is the term gaslighting, is that an appropriate term? It's a manipulation tactic for sure.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
So
yeah, I, after reading about John, I'm like, you know, he was a real stand up guy. Ugh. But that's why Edgar didn't have his full name. His full last name is Allen. He kept his blood last name too. And I think that was a big part of it. Well, and also he wasn't fully adopted.
Yeah.
Drama. It's already starting. But to add to that, while all of this is going on, Edgar has a love interest. Like, I mean, he's young. Like, he's just, you know, doing the young thing. But while, like, that feud and stuff was going on with John, and while he was trying to attend the University of Virginia, he had fallen in love with a young woman named Elmira Royster. And she was known a lot of the time as Sarah. And they were actually engaged for a time, but it ended up falling through. She had promised to wait for him. I don't think this was anything on her. I think a lot of it had to do with her dad. But when he got back from the university and she had, you know, he was ready to go. He's like, you know what? I obviously can't be here. I'm ready to start my life. You know, let's do the ringy dingy thing. She's like, yeah, about that. I ended up getting promised to somebody else.
Yeah. Well, the fact that he was in debt for gambling probably didn't help
the
situation.
No, no, exactly. And it had been discovered later that Elmira's father had absolutely intercepted in this relationship. He was not a fan of Edgar. And after hearing about what had happened at the university, he's like, oh, fuck that. So Edgar had tried to write to Sarah or Elmira a bunch of times while he was away. And her father had taken all of the letters and kept them.
Intercepted.
Yep. And he tried, you know, he was the cock block in the story. He was like, you can't even make contact with her. Like, no. And he ended up coaxing Elmira to marry somebody else that he thought was worthy, somebody in the same profession that he was in. So it kind of shows you what really was going on. And Poe was devastated by this. He was absolutely enamored with Elmira. And by the time he found out what was going on with that, he could not take it anymore. So in 1827, he ended up going to Boston, and that's when he actually published his first pamphlet called The Tamerlane and Other Poems. So he was a writer from the beginning. I mean, like I had said before, he was a dreamer, a very imaginative child. And I think with some of the trauma that obviously people didn't talk about back then, and it is noted that he had some pretty severe nightmares. This is where his ideas came from for his writings throughout his whole life, which was unfortunately pretty short. At this time, while he was over there, he was in poverty. So when he had turned 18, he decided to join the army. He enlisted under the name Edgar A. Perry, and he really did well. By all records of him, he rose through the army quite quickly, and he had actually ended up in the rank of sergeant major. So, I mean, he took it seriously. He wanted to do something. Around the time that he was really doing well for himself and climbing the ranks, unfortunately, more tragedy strikes. Edgar's foster mother had passed away, and John Allen was back in the picture. He had decided to pull Edgar out of the army and enroll him into a U.S. military academy at West Point.
What?
Yeah. It's like, dude, he's already in the army.
Yeah.
Like, what are you trying to play at? You know? Right before he had left for the academy in 1829, Poe published another collection of his works. Oh man, I cannot talk today, so forgive me. And I'm a Poe nerd. Al-Araf and Tamerlane in Minor Poems. So he had taken kind of the collection before and added some. And it should be noted that he wasn't getting famous for these pamphlets right away, that he was lucky enough to get them published. He did very well academically. Oh, yeah. You hear that back there?
I do.
Lanny Pavarotti of the Cat Choir. So, okay, yeah, he published that second pamphlet. What we need to remember is, you know, he is not somebody that sloughs off. He did very well academically. And even though he got pulled out from what he was doing and put into something else, he really did try with his education. He's back at it. He's trying again. What continued to come back for him, though, was the issue of financials. It was the repeat game of what was being done before. So though he did really well and he was regarded very much by his peers and his teachers, it did not help him. It got to the point where he didn't have the financial backing. He didn't want to be there because he saw where it was going. And so because he was so freaking tired of the bullshit, he tried to get expelled. Because, you know, at that point, he's like, look what happened when I tried. And yeah. I had a gambling problem. You know, he's like, I'd rather get expelled and look kind of cool going out than, you know.
Get that bad boy image.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, he tried and he did succeed. He got expelled by skipping all of his classes and drill for an entire week.
Okay.
And it said that he got some good writing in during that time because he didn't give a fuck. But you better believe that John was pissed. Super pissed. But Poe's like, you know, bye. So he had went off to New York. And after that, he's back at it. He's publishing more poetry. And then he went back to Baltimore because this kid can't sit still, where he really dove deep into more writing. And this time he wasn't just focusing on poetry. He was focusing on story writing. With that, he had won $50 in 1833 for a story in the Baltimore Weekly. And this is where he started getting noticed. This got him the cred that he needed in the editorial world. And for, you know, a little bit of time in between, it wasn't long before he ended up finding himself back in Richmond with an editorial job for the Southern Literary Messenger. And he became quite the respected critical reviewer for that article.
Nice.
Yeah, so good on him. This would be a big part of his golden years in his life. Probably the happiest we can actually see him. So in this golden year time for him, he had married his 13-year-old cousin.
Oh, Lord. Yeah.
Think of the time frame.
Still creepy. Still very creepy.
Exactly, because he was 27.
Oh, God.
I know. Oh, what'd you do it? Her name was Virginia Clem. We'll come back to Virginia. But by all accounts, he was said to be very happy and very affectionate to his wife and mother-in-law.
I can't.
His aunt. Take a moment.
So don't creepy.
Think about it.
I just...
I know. It's so bad. But we know Poe. We knew that the happy times wouldn't last. And let's just forget that that happened. Because, you know. He was kind of back to his old habits after a while. That honeymoon period, so to speak, kind of wore off for him. His addictions with gambling and drinking had really subsided during this marriage. He was very happy. But...
being a pedophile.
At this time. Yeah!
Oh, God.
Don't think about it. Don't think about it. He started going back into the drinking pretty heavily. And he ended up actually getting fired from the editorial job in Richmond because of it. So, we're back to where we were before. And he had decided that this was going to be a great time to go back to New York. Let's take a moment to talk about that drinking problem. So this is kind of the first time we're really mentioning it in the episode. He wasn't a belligerent. We need to really know that about him. He drank a lot, but not to the point where he was like, couldn't talk and like on the floor.
More
he just
like-
had a problem.
More like a Captain Jack Sparrow.
Yes. Yes.
A stumbling
drunk.
Can you
imagine that? Yeah. Can you imagine
that? I am imagining that.
Yeah, like, I'm Edgar Allan Poe. You know? Like, yeah. That'd be awesome. But, like, you know, it wasn't like, yeah, probably Jack Sparrow level, but, like, nothing beyond that. But, so, okay, like, he wasn't, like, drunk. He wasn't, like, you know, getting shwasted on the reg out in public. But it should be noted that, I mean, it's so clear that he had some deep-seated issues that never got resolved and he tried to ignore by doing other things.
Yeah.
And the reason why this drinking problem had started is because he was actually terrified of social settings. He was very much in his own head. He didn't like to really get out and, you know, express himself and talk to people. So for him, once he really started getting more popular and he became an editorial, you know, critique, he really needed to talk to people and he couldn't do it. So he was known, like there are records of him from fellow coworkers and friends stating that he would drink heavily before a social gathering where, especially if he knew he had to talk in front of a large group, he couldn't do it without drink.
Coming from someone who has some social anxieties, I can relate to that. I mean, I don't get like, I don't overly drink, but like, you know, the one or two drink rule is that's legit. That's a real thing that when you do that, then that wall comes down a little bit and you know, like you can kind of cut loose a little bit. He just sounds like he had a few more.
Exactly. I can get behind that a little bit and completely understand that because liquid courage, they call it.
Yes.
Liquid courage. But it got to the point where, you know, he would just do that no matter what. Like, it stopped just being during, you know, his presentations in front of large groups. It started becoming anytime he had to be around people. So,
you know, that's where in general.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly. And that's how the problem really started. And we need to keep that in mind for later because it's going to come back up. But for now, let's jump into 1838. So he hit a peak in his literary talents at this time when he was living in Philly. Because yes, he's back in Philly. This man is a mover. This is when he wrote The Telltale Heart, Mask of the Red Death, The Black Cat, the pit and the pendulum, the gold bug, the fall of the House of Usher, murders in the Rue Morgue, and so much more. Oh yeah, he was on it.
Philly was good to him.
Yeah.
And I'm just thinking of that song from Fresh Prince, and I'm like, wow, I just wish I had a way to like turn that into a Poe song. And I can't think on the spot. Ooh. This Somebody. Is a story all about how my Edgar Allan's life got flipped. I can't do it.
Yes!
Turned upside down. I'd like to take a minute. I can't do it, but you know what I mean. Good intentions. Right. Good intentions.
Yes. I like where you're going, and I love it. We should do that. We should like write it up and record it. But yeah, so I mean, we're seeing him grow in this time with his literary talents and the exploration that he's doing with these stories, because he's doing poetry and writing some pretty excellent stories. Like, he's becoming more faceted. It's not just one type of story. He's kind of playing with genres, because he didn't just write tragedy. He wrote a lot of comedy as well, and science fiction.
Oh yeah. I think I have a couple of those in that collection that I have.
Yeah.
The first editions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was on it.
I did not know that he wrote comedy.
Right? You're like, what? This man smiled? Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like why it's so much more interesting to have that in my collection, because I'm like, that is,
yeah,
you know, unusual.
Right? This man had many sides. But yeah, during that time, he was writing this shit. He was getting it. And this didn't come without notice. I mean, his reputation was building and building quickly at this point. And a big reason for that was 1839 hit, and he became a co-editor for the Burton's Gentleman's Magazine, which was also in Philly. So he had an outlet. He didn't have to say, hey, I'm like trying to find somebody that's going to publish this for me, when he's like, bitch, I am the co-editor. So he had a freaking gift for supernatural horror. So I will never get over him. But this is where he really started going like, here's my stuff. Here's my stuff. Here's my stuff. Read it. You know? June of 1840, he had resigned from the Gentleman's Magazine, only to come back a year later after the magazine had actually switched owners and they had become the Graham's Ladies and Gentlemen's Magazine. And here's where it starts to get a little funny, because you think about what he was writing and you think about the time frame. In 1843, he had won $100 from the dollar paper, the dollar newspaper, I should say, out of Philadelphia for his story, The Gold Bug. This piece was what really got him out there. Like, household name, people were really noticing him, not just as a co-editor of anything, but as somebody who had a literary talent. The next year, he went back to New York City, and he wasn't happy. You know, again, staying in one spot. This guy's got to jump. So he was back at it with writing and publishing in New York City. And, you know, he did have connections. So this is why he kept hopping, but it was normally to Baltimore, New York, Philly, or Richmond, because he couldn't sit still. Let's take it to January 29th of 1845. Among the pages of the American Review was printed The Raven. This is Edgar Allan Poe's most famous work, and he became famous overnight nationwide. Full-blown household name, I'm Poe, bitch.
I get the vibes of like, Breaking Bad, Heisenberg. Yeah. What's my name, bitch? Yeah. Heisenberg.
Yeah.
I'm Poe, bitch.
I'm Poe, bitch.
I'm the one who knocks. I'm the one who knocks.
making Eddie say nevermore. Like, yeah, oh man. But yeah, he was getting it. This was his prime time. Okay. He had his celebration. We can laugh about that. But this is when things really get darker for him.
Of course. That's the way life always is.
Oh, yeah, fucking exactly. Life. Yeah. It wouldn't be Poe or Macabre if we weren't talking about it here. 2 years later, after he's like celebrating the Raven, his wife Virginia died of, guess what? TB. He never recovered from her passing emotionally, and it really set him back with his drinking. Hardcore. The following year, Edgar was pursuing yet another poet. And we are talking about Sarah Helen Whitman, who had lived in Rhode Island. He had come across her and kind of felt like they were kindred spirits. They were engaged briefly, but what we should know is a lot of this stuff was not with his full heart. It was very platonic. He just needed a friend. He was not into really wanting to be with somebody else. Virginia really tore him up hardcore. But that's not to say that things didn't come back full circle for him later. He didn't stop there with Sarah. Helen Whitman, we'll get to why I said that. We need to be specific on Sarah's. He had a very brief, very platonic relationship with a woman named Annie Richmond and another woman named Sarah Anna Lewis. But that's because they supported him financially. He was kind of looking for a sugar mama, not gonna lie, for a little bit. He wrote poetic tributes to all of these ladies. he did have enough affection for him to do that, so good on him. But wildly enough, 1849, he went back to Philly and just went freaking nuts. Like, he was like, I don't care about anything. And he started getting in trouble in Philly. He somehow kind of got his shit back together and made it out of Philly without getting into some really hot water. And he went back to Richmond. Woo, here we go. Once again, he's like a ping pong game. Boop, boop, beep, boop, boop. He ended up running into the infamous Elmira Royster, they had finally become engaged and they made it full circle. She had been a widow. She was now the widow Mrs. Shelton.
Wondered about that. I was like, well, yeah. Someone apparently is a widow now.
Yeah. Yeah. So they were ecstatic to finally have their time in their moment because they had waited so long. And even though Edgar was very infatuated with Virginia, he still had that old spark for Elmira. Now, I don't think it was the same as it was when he was younger with Elmira. I think it wasn't at the same level as he had felt for Virginia. I think this was something where he's like, I have my second chance. And like this, I've wanted and waited for this forever. And we get the chance to do it. Let's do this. So they did. I mean, they were engaged and, you know, this would be a very happy summer for him. Unfortunately, it would also be his last. That September, he had left for Baltimore once again, very late in the month. So, you know, Elmira was really worried because he had some pretty grand ideas about what he was wanting to do next and where he was traveling. And this really, really didn't sit well with Elmira. She was worried for multiple reasons. When he had said that he had decided he was going to be traveling, she was like, did you forget that you had cholera, you know, back in July? You never fully recovered from that. So why do you think you'd be healthy enough to travel again? And he's like, oh, you know, I'm fine. Well, they had a mutual friend that was a doctor. She said, you can go if you go see him first. And you get a clear bill of health. He's like, you got it. He did go visit. But it was more of a house call where he and his friend that was the doctor just, had a social hour.
I was going to say, they were probably sitting around drinking and shooting the shit. Yes. And he's like, just tell her I'm fine. You know.
Yeah.
You know how she is. Just tell her I'm fine.
Yeah. You know she worries. It's fine. I'm fine. Clearly. Clearly, yeah. I'm fine.
Look at me. I'm as fit as a fiddle.
I'm so healthy.
Never been better.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I mean, it was evident to a lot of people that he was not feeling the best.
Well, yeah, because cholera, as we know from the Jon Snow episode, is the one where you shit your brains out and like you basically die in a very short period of time. So
yeah,
this must have been around the time frame when they did have antibiotics or whatever. So
yeah,
it would have been okay.
But yeah.
Yeah. Normally you just fucking die within a very short period of time.
Right. Exactly. So he's even lucky he made it out of that. Mm-hmm. But it was so clear he had lasting health problems. And I think a lot of that shit was underlying that he did not want to acknowledge. Let's keep that in the back of the mind, because we're going to get into some things later that we're going to discuss about how things ended. So he had cholera just a few months before this whole travel situation. So yeah, he left his friend doctor going, hey, it was good to see ya. See ya on my next trip back out.
Finger guns. Pew, pew, pew,
yeah,
pew.
Finger guns. Oh, you little, yeah.
He's you like, rascal. See, dude. You rascal.
Yeah, you rascal. You little heathen. It was good to see you. On September 27th, Poe had boarded the ship to Baltimore. Records say that he had boarded the ship at 4 a.m. There are no records of where he was between September 27th and October 3rd, but let's think on that for a hot second. We have to calculate out how much time it takes back then on a ship from where he was boarding in Virginia to Baltimore on a ship. Okay, 1840s. You're looking at about 3 to 4 day journey. Give or take, you know, if it's a good ride, smooth sailing, pun intended, 3 to 4 days. Okay. But this does not account for the rest of that time. So where the fuck did he go? Like, what was he doing? He clearly landed in Baltimore. People had seen him October 3rd, which we have to note then was an election day. This is going to play into a theory later that we had discussed on the Patreon episode, but he was seen at a lot of different places on election day, October 3rd. Bar hopping. Yeah. The most notable was that very last spot. He had been found in a Baltimore tavern called the Gunner's Hall. Now, reports had said that he was in a state of complete delirium. He was wearing somebody else's clothes, and he appeared to be very drunk, more drunk than normal for him. So, okay, what could that be? He was taken to Washington University Hospital, where he had spent the next 4 days in and out of consciousness. Sometimes it is said that when he would come out and be fully alert, he would be completely fine. There are other times when he would come into a sort of consciousness and scream. He would just scream at the air. Like, he wasn't just looking at somebody. It's like he couldn't see the people in his room with him, but he was screaming. So what could that be? And of course, we have to talk about this. And unfortunately, Edgar Allan Poe died on October 7th of 1849. The medical records showing that his cause of death was phrenitis. Sorry, I'm butchering that so hard. This means inflammation of the brain, we have to note, for anybody who doesn't know what the medical records looked like back then and studied the medical history during this time, this was a very common thing to put on a death record for somebody if they did not know the cause of death. It was kind of the fail-safe umbrella term that people put when they didn't really truly know what happened to the individual.
Yeah. It's not like they were doing brain scans back then, so yeah. How would they fucking know that his brain was inflamed?
Yeah,
it's like they weren't putting him in an MRI or whatever.
Right. Right. Exactly. So was it truly something with his brain? There are multiple theories out there. In fact, there are actually 26 theories that I've come across. Holy shit. Yeah. Now, some of them fit pretty far-fetched for me. I highly recommend, we're not going to go into all 26 here. Listeners, I highly recommend that you would look into that if you're really interested. Some of those you're going to be like, what?
Aliens. I'm not saying it was aliens, but yeah. Aliens.
Aliens. So, I mean, but others seem are like, okay, I could maybe see that. But the big ones that make sense to me personally, and obviously this is my opinion, there are several. Some say it was alcohol poisoning, which he did drink. I don't know, you know, to what extent, obviously. Nobody knows. But at the state that he was in the tavern, potentially.
You would think alcohol poisoning, though, you would think for something like that, and I don't really know, but you would think that you would die faster.
Yes.
You wouldn't think that. That's the thing. Yeah, you wouldn't think that would last for that many days, I think.
Exactly.
Correct me if I'm wrong, medical people, but I think if you have severe alcohol poisoning, you would die much faster. It wouldn't take you like the 3 or however 4 or whatever days it was.
Exactly. And to be in and out of consciousness like that and acting that way? I don't think so. I really don't. Some say, now this is one that we talked about, remember that he didn't have his own clothes on. Some say it had to do with the election antics of the time. So on Patreon, we had kind of talked about this. Back in that time frame, there was this movement of people that were paid. They were kind of their own, not mafia group, they just had their own political agenda. They would actually go and just take random people off the streets, basically kidnapping them, and they would make them go vote for a specific candidate on these ballots. Now, things were run very differently back then with elections. So what they would do, they would make them go in and force them to do this vote. They would then come back out. They were given different clothes and different disguises, and then they would be taken to another spot. This is like the weirdest, like, you kidnapped me to fucking vote? Like, what? I mean, but that happened. And I mean, people were threatened. People were beaten. Sometimes they were even like beaten to death or killed because they were like, you are going to do this. Now, obviously, this wasn't like really fucking common, but it was something that really, you know, was a thing.
It's like, so some hardcore politics right there.
Yes. Yes, exactly. It's like, damn, people. And sometimes it was said that people would lace drinks for people at bars, and that's how they would be picking people up. So it's like, okay, did this have something to do with it? He was found in somebody's clothes, but he can't recall what happened to him. And he didn't have the mental capacity. Yeah, right? New, like the original roofie. Because he couldn't recall what happened to him. When he would come back into consciousness and people tried to talk to him, he never said a thing about it. He never said what had happened to him. And at times he said he didn't know.
Do you know when he was admitted to the hospital, did he have any other symptoms? What other symptoms did he have?
Apparently he was sweaty. And he, like, when he had kind of come in and out. Yeah. I really think that it sounded like a high fever. Like, he just was probably delusional from that. And, you know, we have to think too, all right, he just had cholera not that long before he had traveled. So was it some real, you know, resilient things just lingering in his body that weren't letting go from the cholera? Was his immune system so shot? You know, did he have some underlying health conditions besides what was going on with the cholera, and this just, you know, fast-tracked him into a more severe issue? We kind of joke about, like, was it food poisoning? Because back then, food poisoning could fucking kill you.
Yeah.
You know, did he have a bad spot of food, you know, whether it was on the ship, whether he had got to Baltimore and had a meal and had that problem? Because people have been known to either hallucinate or not remember shit after having food poisoning, like really severe food poisoning.
What year was this again?
So this was 1849.
Okay. So I was like, does this track with yellow fever?
Oh.
So I just looked this up and it said that there was an incident in Virginia in 1855 that they know of yellow fever.
Hmm. Well, and here's the thing with cholera, were people kind of misinterpreting in that time frame some cholera stuff with yellow fever?
I mean, how would they really know? I mean, I guess at this point, they would know cholera at this point because they were able to identify it under like a microscope. Same with yellow fever. They would have been able to identify that because yellow fever had been around for a really long time, but it wasn't really known for being in the U.S.
Right.
Broke out of Boston.
Ship.
Yeah. So that's why I was like, maybe yellow fever. Maybe he picked up. Who knows? Anyways, just a possible random thought.
Yeah. Yes. I like that idea too. I never even thought about that.
Misdiagnosis or something like that. But
right. Exactly.
We'll put that on the table.
Yeah. I like that idea because that makes a lot of sense to me. So we talked about some theories anyway. We won't get into the really the crazier ones. But regardless of what really caused his death, his life was kind of short, but his literary works would go on and be known forevermore. I can't talk highly enough about Poe. He was just, I think he definitely deserves to have a segment on this episode about his legacy and some fun facts, because some of this stuff is so awesome. So some of Poe's literary influences were actually Percy Shelley. Remember him? And Samuel Taylor Coleridge, which, do I nerd hard for Mr. Coleridge. Like, nerd boner level. Like, this Mr. Coleridge could get it literary. Lee. if people want to hear us do some kind of classic literature reads, I would absolutely volunteer to read Rime of the Ancient Mariner, because that's a good piece. But okay, I digress on that. Poe's 1841's Murders of the Rue Morgue really set the pace for our modern detective stories. He was the creator of the detective novel. Obviously, Murders of the Rue Morgue is not a novel, it's a short story, but we wouldn't have what we have today if it weren't for Mr. Poe. He had really set the standard for detective work. And in fact, Sir Arthur Conan Doyle had based Sherlock Holmes after this story. It was actually Poe's character, C. Augustine Dupin, That was a very huge inspiration for Doyle's Sherlock Holmes character to begin with. So if we didn't have Murders of the Rue Morgue, we wouldn't have Sherlock Holmes. Mic drop. Poe had just set a standard, like a new standard for horror when it came to poetry and short stories alike. Many had considered him because of the things that he wrote about and his personalities, that he potentially could have had two personalities. He was known to be very affectionate towards some people that he was really chummy with, and very much sharper and critical of everyone else. Like night and day difference, I guess, between personalities, people said. Some said the difference between the two were so severe that apparently he had a great sense of humor, but he could lash out an insult like nobody's fucking business. I wish I could have seen that in action.
Me too.
Like,
so like, as far as if he was at a roast for someone, you know how they do the roasts? Could you imagine Poe doing a roast? Oh my God.
Oh my gosh. Oh my gosh. Yes. Yes. Well, imagine how witty he was.
Mm-hmm.
That would be hilarious.
That would be a good one. That would be one I would really like to watch, because most of the time those things make me so cringy, I can't watch them. I know. Like the one they just did with like Tom Brady recently. I'm like, I can't watch that. No. But Poe, I would definitely watch. That'd be awesome.
That'd be so awesome. We need to, that should be a show idea. Literary people or roast. Just like historical figures roasts in Polidori. General. Polidori. You horny bastard. Look at you go. But yeah, no, I would love that so much. But yeah, just like that last side note for his personality, and just how he had acted and how quickly he would change. A lot of people thought he was unstable just because of how quick he was to snap.
I would say it's a fair assessment to say that he probably was unstable.
Yeah, right? Like, look at the shit. Like, he did not like to stay in one place, but he would go to the same places when he would bounce around.
Yeah.
There's something to that.
Yeah. Familiarity, but also just, yeah, no, I get that.
Yeah, exactly. It's said that his nightmares had led him to write the stories and poems that he did, which we kind of had mentioned before. Many who had studied him actually would say that some of his work is a direct reflection on his inner turmoils that he had never addressed, which I could absolutely see. He lost both of his parents very young. His dad had left his mom, and then his mom 2 years later died of an illness. Like, he went through some shit. And then let's not even bring up John Allen again. I would not be surprised if he had issues with mental health. He had gone through it. And we know that he had battled with alcohol and gambling. So, I mean, this is my opinion. I think that it does kind of come through pretty obviously, but I think he did suffer from depression, and perhaps some other things. It obviously can't be confirmed. You look at the time frame and yeah, you're not really going to get that out of a medical look in that time, but it shows he went through a lot of shit. I mean, look at the shit that he wrote.
He you know? Had all the makings of a great artist. He had every necessary, the checklist of things that it takes to make a great artist. He had all of those things.
Yes. Absolutely.
Or he would have been a comedian. Mind. He would have been a stand-up comic. That was his other option in life. If he was born which in the future.
Right? Can you imagine? Oh, man. I just... Oh.
So many options.
With him.
Yeah. He's on my list of dead celebrities that if I had the chance to have dinner with at some point.
Me too.
He's on that list.
I would love that. Another reason to love him, he was a huge fan of Shakespeare. I mean, you can so freaking tell. You can. Mm-hmm. Here we go. I can't talk today. Poe's work traveled very quickly outside of the US. In fact, the French were enamored by him. What we have to remember is that Poe wasn't that popular in America initially, in the very beginning. But the French, all over that shit. They spread the word to the world about how amazing Edgar Allan Poe was. And in fact, the French were the ones that got the Americans really hyped about their own poet. The French poetry community was so obsessed that poets such as Charles Baudelaire talked about the macabre writer to show examples of how masterful his poetry were. They had the ultimate nerd boner for Mr. Poe. Ooh la la. And here we are, 200 years later. He never knew, unfortunately, the impact that he had made in his lifetime. He only got a brief taste when The Raven was published. That was the excitement that he saw. The Raven did not even compare to all of the other works that he had published combined. That was such a turning point for him. Even after his whole golden year, literary mind-esque time where he wrote Fall of the House of Usher, Telltale Heart, etc., it didn't match what The Raven did for him. But our culture would also totally not be the same today if it weren't for him. He basically invented the detective story. He invented and redefined what horror was. He had influenced science fiction. You cannot tell me a single pop culture avenue that he did not influence. He dabbled in so many different genres of writing, and I think that that wasn't truly appreciated until later either. I'm a nerd. He's just one of my favorites. he was just a master with psychological horror. And we didn't see anything like that before Poe. He evolved the idea of a literary external monster. He took that monster that people think of, Frankenstein, Dracula, and he had made it internal. He made that scarier than a physical monster. The mental beast that we deal with, he had made the most terrifying horror stories out of. And this, we wouldn't have that kind of shit today if it weren't for him doing that. I think it kind of reflects on him as a person as well. He's referenced in movies, TV shows, music, books, art, sports. I'm sorry. Shout out to the Baltimore Ravens. I am not a football fan, but I have respect for a sports team that can respect some fucking literary art. It's insane. Okay. Another fun fact. Poe's story, Berenice, was so graphic and grotesque when it got published that the Southern Literary Messenger got a ton of fucking complaints from readers. Can you imagine? I want to read those. It's like some Mildred from Philly, like, I can't read this to my children. Yeah. Poe only made $15 for his golden egg, The Raven.
Oh my God.
Yeah, the piece that made him a household name. He saw $15. Can you imagine what his worth is now? It's insane.
Well, and now everything is, it's copyright free. So
yeah,
anyone can make money off. Yeah, anyone can make money off of his works. It's kind of sad.
Which is really sad. Yeah.
Yeah.
Agreed. With that, speaking of readings.
You're wicked smart, Poe. You're wicked
smart. You're wicked smart. You're wicked smart. remember how I had said earlier that we kind of had a reason why we did the Edgar Allan Poe episode?
Now we're going to lighten it up a bit.
Yeah, we're going to take it to another level, which we hope you enjoy. Patreon listeners, members, thank you for listening and putting up with my fucking shenanigans. We're going to do it again. And this time we're going to do different readings. the whole reason why this started was because, okay, Hallie and I one morning were just randomly on the phone talking about random stuff and just nerding about shit. Poe actually got brought up in conversation because we're nerds.
That's what we do.
Yeah, exactly. And we had talked about like where he came from and stuff. And I was just like, you know what people don't fucking think of? You know, you hear audiobooks and like retellings of this stuff, and sometimes you have like British accents that are like, you know, oh, nevermore, knocking at the chamber door, and like stuff like that, which sounds amazing. Or you have just like that really like, you know, rich, you know, very scholarly reading of this work. But nobody seems to address the fact that this fucker's from Boston. And East Coast, baby! Like, I mean, okay, yes, I absolutely have mad respect for our East Coast listeners. We fucking love you. As a Midwesterner, I know that you laugh your ass off at how I talk.
Uh-huh.
I understand.
Yeah,
but
we laugh at how we talk.
East Coast. Yes, exactly. I make fun of myself. I sound like your stereotypical grandma trying to bring, you know, cookies to your table. I understand. East Coast, completely different. I've been to Boston twice, and they have a certain way of speaking. And I laugh my ass off when I think of any piece written by Edgar Allan Poe read in a Boston accent, a Bostonian accent. The attitude, the just the drawl. I am obsessed, and I suck at doing an East Coast accent. We did this for a Patreon episode. I had done just a regular reading from an excerpt of Lenore, and then I had just tore two pieces the Raven, just certain sections of it in a Bostonian accent, and we were crying at one point. I had to stop my reading because I actually hurt my voice. I have been trying to practice since then, and I think I like practiced myself out of it.
You just so went too hard.
I went too fucking hard. So we're gonna try it. It's going to be butchered. I'm so sorry, but we're gonna try it for this. And you know what? If anything, maybe we just put the old reading in. You know, we might have to delete this one or leave it in for bloopers. I'm not perfect. So I'm going to start by doing a regular reading. Okay. My absolute favorite from Poe is Mask of the Red Death. I just fucking love it. So this is just a normal reading, an excerpt from Mask of the Red Death. "Who dares?" he demanded hoarsely of the courtiers who stood near him. "Who dares insult us with this blasphemous mockery? Seize him and unmask him, that way that we may know whom we have to hang at sunrise from the battlements." It was in the eastern or blue chamber in which stood the Prince Prospero as he uttered these words. They rang throughout the seven rooms loudly and clearly, for the prince was a bold and robust man, and the music had become hushed at the waving of his hand. Okay. Okay, you get the vibe? Yes. we're gonna switch gears, and it's gonna just be terrible. So if you would like to fast forward, listener discretion is advised for how dumb I'm going to sound. And there is a reason why I sound like I'm chain smoking for 50 years. It's because of the impact that Boston had on me after one stereotypical incident of somebody saying it was too hot with the chocolate in the car. That's been listed on Patreon. That whole incident, but we could get into a funny story about the time that I got stopped by TSA in the Boston Logan. That was fun. But anyway, here we go. This is an excerpt for Hallie because she wanted to hear from the Telltale Heart. And it's a fucking short excerpt, but we're gonna go. We're gonna try it out. "I had my head in, and it was about to open the lantern when the thumb slipped upon the tin fastening. And the old man sprang up in bed crying, 'Who's there?'
I kept quite still and said nothing. For a whole hour, I did not move a muscle. And in the meantime, I did not hear him lie down. I was still sitting up in bed listening, just as I had done night after night, hearkening in the dead watches in the wall.
Oh, man. That was good.
I cannot do it any other way. I have tried to do a normal voice, and I can't. And it's literally the incident from Salem.
Well, okay. Listeners, if listeners want to hear that, then they just need to join Patreon, because it's not being rude or whatever. It's just an event that happened, and you just were retelling an event that happened, and it's funny.
Exactly. It was funny, and it made quite the impact on me, let me tell you. I was in one of my most vulnerable states. And I had that, and it made it feel better. I laughed really hard.
Shayla!
The chocolate.
Shayla, it's too hot to put the chocolate in the car. We gotta get going.
As I'm sitting on the John. There you have it, listeners. This has been Edgar Allan Poe, and we pay a very respectful homage to him, even though we just did what I just had done. Kelly had nothing to do with this. She just laughed. Regardless,
I did, kind of, though. I mean, I'm sort of your partner in crime, because this was an idea that we concocted together, so.
Yeah, it's true. We love him, even though we did that. We love him a lot. We just thought, like, why hasn't anybody acknowledged that this potentially could have been how it was, you know? We fucking love Edgar Allan Poe. And listeners, we want to hear, what is your favorite Edgar Allan Poe piece? What is it? Mine is Mask of the Red Death. Hallie.
Telltale
Heart. I think I know. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah.
I knew it. But yeah, we want to hear it. And you can tell us multiple ways. But mostly the private Facebook page would be a great place for that. Go hang out with the fabulous people that we have on that little hangout spot, because they're fucking cool. Speaking of that, if you have any stories that you want to share with us that have happened to you or somebody you know, doesn't have to just be true crime. We can do paranormal on this show. You bet your sweet ass. So please, 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 we would love to hear those stories from you. There are multiple ways that you can send it to us as well. If you would rather type your story, you can do that to thatsomacabre@gmail.com. That's with two S's. Or you can go on macabrepod.com and record through the SpeakPipe. You can do multiple if you need it. It lasts up to 5 minutes, but hey, you want to ramble, do it. Just let us know, part 1, 2, 3, etc. If you want more from us, I know we've been mentioning it a lot this episode. That's kind of where the idea had originated, but we are on Patreon and we have a lot of fun over there on Macabre After Dark. So if you are looking for more of a laugh and more obscenities, that is probably the fucking place. and you know what? If you like what you're hearing, if you like hanging out with us, we would kind of like it if you could rate and review, please. On your favorite podcast platform, because we kind of want to know what you think. You know, we like doing this for you. And tell a friend, tell the raven in the back, tell the person you're hiding in the floorboards about the show. We'd really appreciate it.
Or behind the brick wall, if you prefer.
Yeah. Or in the crumbling house, or the person chilling out, exfoliating in the ground. Yeah. Just go tell a friend. But as always, it was fun to nerd for an episode about this shit. So I hope that you had fun. We hope that you have fun and you be safe. And we're going to catch you on the other side of a cup.
And we'll see you next time.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Oh, my God.
Jag försökte ringa dig, men du svarade inte.